Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Abgenommen, bedauert.
Thank you all for tuning in, and welcome to the Frequency of the Past. We have another showcase episode for you, so if you're enjoying the series, please let me know the usual ways, and as always, please follow, review, and rate. The higher the rating, the more easier it is for people to find this podcast and enjoy these great stories. And with all that, please enjoy the show.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our play. But first, a brief message from the National Safety Council. The council says that drinking was a factor in one out of every five fatal traffic accidents in 1943. Nearly 5,000 Americans might be living today and contributing to the war effort if irresponsible motorists and pedestrians had not yielded to their thirst while walking or driving. Moreover, says the council, there is considerable reason for believing that officially reported figures, high as they are, understate the true importance of alcohol as a traffic accident cause. So, friends, isn't it just plain common sense never to drive or walk on public streets or highways after drinking, and especially observe the no-drinking rule at night? Figures show that one in three fatal night accidents involve drinking. Perhaps you yourself have a thought that will help prevent driving while drinking. If so, listen to the new Safety Limerick Contest at the end of tonight's drama. It's murder! It's murder! Another exciting mystery drama presented by the National Safety Council in cooperation with the Blue Network. Tonight we follow the eminent retired actor and amateur criminologist, Rex A. Starr, as he and his niece, the Broadway columnist Joan Adams, go to an artist colony in Maine to spend a peaceful vacation and find that death is no respecter of peaceful ambitions. It is late morning of a clear July day, and we find Rex and Joan hurrying along the quaint and colorful main street of the tiny town.
Joan, I can't persuade you to give up this fantastic idea. You don't know the first thing about sketching.
I don't have to. I'm full of inspiration. Oh, here's Jonathan Bixby's art supply store. Let's get that sketching pad and pencil. Rex, before we go in, one favor?
Two, if you'll forget you're a female Da Vinci.
Listen, if Jonathan gets off on his favorite subject, you know, he thinks all artists are bad. Don't argue with him. I don't want to lose a minute before getting to work.
Okay.
I feel genius pounding at my temples.
Well, I hope it doesn't give you a headache.
Hello, Jonathan.
Oh, good morning, Miss Adams. Mr. Starr.
Good morning.
Nice to see you.
Perhaps you won't be when you learn what's just happened to my niece.
Huh?
Don't pay any attention, Jonathan. Uncle Rex just doesn't understand the impulse to create beauty.
Have you got it, Miss Adams?
Powerfully. All I need is a sketching pad and pencils.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Miss Adams. I got thinking of you as different from the strangers that have sullied this respectable town. Oh, I don't hate him, Mr. Starr. I feel sorry for him, heading for perdition. Besides, I have to make a living.
Oh, thank goodness we've come around to that. Now about the sketching pad and pencil.
Yes, all right, Miss Adams. Oh, by the way, did you print that piece I give you for your column?
Oh, for pity's sake, Jonathan, I forgot all about it.
What piece, Joan?
Oh, just a bit of scandal that Jonathan picked up.
About what?
Here's the pad and pencils, Miss Adams.
Thank you, Jonathan. That's fine.
Dad! Dad! Dad!
Well, what's the matter, Annabelle?
Oh, something terrible's happened.
Well, stop crying and tell me.
I was walking along the beach, and I came to the part that thought was deserted, and I saw an easel standing there, so I walked over. And there on the beach, his face buried in the sand, was Mark Turner.
Mark Turner, the illustrator?
Yes, he's dead. He was murdered.
There's the easel. And there's Mark Turner's body. Phew, I'm glad to be on flat ground again.
I wonder how Annabelle knew that Mark had been murdered, Rick.
There must have been some evidence. And there it is.
What?
This wire around his neck.
Oh, how awful.
Now, why should anybody want to kill Mark Turner? He minded his own business.
I don't know. Oh, but I do.
What do you mean you don't, but you do?
You remember Jonathan asking me about a piece that he gave me for my column?
Yes, what's that to do with a murder?
Everything, perhaps. I'll tell you about it, and you can draw your own conclusions. First, you know that Mark married Felice Morgan about 5 years ago.
Of course. Felice used to be his secretary,
That's right.
She and Mark were incurably happy.
Uh-uh. They weren't.
What?
According to Jonathan, Felice and Mark had been on the Alps for more than a year.
I don't believe it. They were two of the most loving lovebirds I've ever seen.
An act, my dear uncle, to protect Mark's pride.
Nonsense.
Actually, Felice was madly in love with Paul Bradford, the playwright.
Now, look here, Joan. I know Paul Bradford, too. And if anything like that had been going on, I'd have seen it.
Maybe, maybe not. At any rate, Jonathan's story goes like this. Felice wanted a divorce from Mark, so she could marry Paul.
I can't believe it.
Well, Mark would have none of it, naturally. And then Felice and Paul were furious, not to mention frustrated.
Where did Jonathan pick up that fabulous yarn?
Paul told him the other night.
Paul?
He came into Jonathan's store, drunk, and said he had to talk to somebody he could trust.
Somebody he could trust, eh?
That's beside the point, Rex. Mark's been murdered. What do we do about finding the murderer?
Well, I suppose I'll have to give that fable some credence. Come on, we'll climb back into town and have a talk with the writer. No sign of him, Joan?
No, I searched the whole cottage. Paul has flown the coop.
I was hoping it wouldn't be true.
What about the garage?
Car's gone. Everything points to a quick getaway.
Now, this time he must be miles away.
I don't think so. Why did Paul kill Mark Turner?
To get Felice, Mark's wife. But I told you that story.
Would he run away without calling on the fair Felice? For whose hand he bloodied his own?
Hey, you've got something there, Uncle.
I think I have.
What are we waiting for? Her cottage is just down the street. No answer, Rex. Let's open the door and rush them.
Yes, if they're still there.
One of them's here. Look.
Where?
Over there, by the window.
Good heavens, Billy. She's dead.
Rex, is that picture wire around her neck?
Yes.
Why should Paul kill Felice, too?
I don't know. Joan, here. Read this note in the typewriter.
See? To whom it may concern. What? This is really a bad typing job.
Worst I've ever seen. Obviously done by an amateur.
Rex, this is a suicide note.
So it seems.
And it tells the whole story. Felice strangled her husband, Mark Turner, with picture wire while he was doing an oil on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
She had to get rid of him so she could marry Paul Bradford. But when she told Paul what she'd done for him, the ingrate refused to have anything to do with her.
Mm-hmm.
Felice couldn't go on living, and so she killed herself in the same way she killed Mark. Well, this solves our case, Rex.
Not quite. There are some paintings on these walls that might fascinate you.
What kind?
A woman with her face cut off.
With her face? Are you kidding? Look at those paintings. Somebody's cut off all their faces.
That's what I said, remember?
But why would anybody want to do that?
I don't know. I'm going to have a look around the studio. I'd like to know who the woman in those paintings is.
How do you know it's the same woman?
Look, Joan. Is that a birthmark or a slip of a brush?
It's a birthmark, Greg. It's on each picture in the same place.
Ah.
Did you find something?
Only the answer, my dear. Yeah, this canvas is standing against the wall, evidently overlooked.
Has it got a painting on it?
Uh-huh. It's a picture of Annabelle.
Annabelle? Annabelle Bixby, Jonathan's daughter?
Correct, Joan. And that telltale birthmark hasn't moved an inch.
But I don't understand.
When we don't understand, Joan, we must look for an explanation.
Oh, where's Jonathan? I guess he must be in the back room of the store. I'll call him, Rick. Why?
Listen, there's light in the back room. Let's get closer.
There, there, Annabelle. Now, don't take it to heart. He wasn't your kind, anyway.
But I loved him, Dad. He loved me. I just know he did.
It would have come to no good, daughter.
How can you say that? Mark promised to marry me. He was going to divorce his wife. He was going to marry me.
He was get that, Rick.
Mark and Annabelle, of all things.
Daddy, he wasn't lying to me. He wasn't lying to me. Only yesterday he made me promise to wait for him till he got his divorce. And then he said we'd get married. We'd go to live in New York.
He was not aiming to get a divorce from his wife, and I can prove it. Paul Bradford told me all about it. Mrs. Turner wanted the divorce so she could marry Mr. Bradford. But Mr. Turner wouldn't give it to her out of spite.
That's not true, Dad.
So Mrs. Turner had to kill her husband to get rid of him. That's what happened, Annabelle.
Oh, Dad, you're not helping me at all.
Isn't she putting on a beautiful actress?
Annabelle, Joan, we're going to the back room for the capture.
It'll be a pleasure. Imagine that, Annabelle, giving us the merry runaround.
Hello, Jonathan.
Oh, Mr. Starr. I didn't hear you come in. Annabelle and I was just having a little...
It was touching enough to be a second act curtain. But the third act, I'm afraid, will have to be played in the sheriff's office.
The sheriff's office?
Yes, Jonathan, and before you take a bow, let me tell you your exit will be permanent.
Sit still, please. Now, how can I sketch you if you keep fidgeting like a Mexican jumping bee?
When I'm restless, I fidget.
What are you so restless about?
Aren't you interested in knowing how I solved the mystery?
But you told me, Uncle Rex. Sit still. You told me that Jonathan was afraid that Mark was turning Annabelle's head. And then when he found out that Mark was using her as a model, Jonathan decided to save his daughter from that fate worse than death.
Your memory amazes me.
So... Jonathan followed Mark to the beach and strangled him. And then he went to Felice's cottage and... Rex, how did you know that Felice didn't commit suicide?
Ah, because she didn't type that note. Remember how badly typed it was?
Yes.
Well, Felice was Mark's secretary before he married her.
And Paul Bradford is a writer and also an expert
exactly.
typist. So it couldn't have been him or Felice.
You reason well, my dear.
But how did you know Annabelle wasn't the murderer? She had the motive.
Yes, but Jonathan gave himself away when he told Annabelle that Felice had to kill Mark in order to get rid of him.
But we thought that too now, didn't we?
Yes, but we were the only living people who read that fake suicide note. We and the picture wire murderer who wrote it.
Oh. Tricky, aren't you? All right, Rex, let's get on with the sketch.
What do you expect to do with that masterpiece if you ever finish it?
Hang it up on the wall.
With picture wire, huh?
Mm. Why, Uncle Rex, you're horrid. You've just murdered the genius in me.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here are the details of this week's Safety Limerick Contest. Prizes consist of a $50 war bond and 10 $5 cash prizes. All you do is submit your idea of the most original last line to our limerick. And now, are you ready? Here we go, line by line. The first line is, Bill decided to take one more nip. Bill decided to take one more nip before driving his car on a trip. Before driving his car on a trip. But that one extra snort Cut his trip extra short. Da-da-da-da-da-da-dip. Remember the last line rhymes with nip and trip. We'll repeat the limerick again. Bill decided to take one more nip before driving his car on a trip. But that one extra snort cut his trip extra short. Da-da-da-da-da-da-dip. Now send your most original concluding line or lines to the National Safety Council, Chicago 6, Illinois, before midnight, Monday, August 14th. Submit as many last lines as you like. The decision of the judges is final. All entries become the property of the National Safety Council. Duplicate prizes will be awarded in case of a tie, and winners will be announced on August 24th. And now, here are the winners of the National Farm Safety Week Limerick Contest. Winners of $5 cash prizes are Thomas H. Larkin of Milwaukee, Mrs. Jean Weingarten, Van Ness, New York, Robert Trafalet, Toledo, Mrs. Mary Pearson, Chicago. Mrs. Virginia J. Holliday, Madison, Wisconsin. Mrs. Les H. Lechner, Robbinsdale, Minnesota. Mrs. Sally Benefield, Decatur, Illinois. Miss Mary Sale, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Charles Shapiro, Los Angeles. And W.B. Achenbeck, Muncie, Indiana. And the grand prize winner of a $50 war bond is Lawrence Wolf, Staunton, Wisconsin. Congratulations to you all. We invite you to join us again next week at this same time for another of our series, It's Murder. Tonight's story was written by Stedman Coles and directed by Stuart Buchanan. This is George Gunn speaking. This is the Blue Network.
Box 13. With the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd, as Dan Holliday.
Box 13. Box 13. Box 13. Box 13.
Well, this is great. I come to the park to get a hot idea, but the day turns out hot, and my idea turns out cold. Idea. Well, I thought I'd find something different in a public park, and I did. A small boy mashing his ice cream cone against my brand new trousers. And all to meet a deadline. Deadline. Story idea. Why didn't I do what I should have done in the first place?
Copy, boy.
Hi, Mr. Holliday.
Hiya.
Hey, Smith, where's the lead on that fire?
Hiya, Mr. Holliday.
What do you say, Bill?
Where's that interview?
Hiya, Dan.
How are you, Joe?
Where's the makeup on page 4?
Hiya, Holliday.
What's a good word, boy?
Hiya, Mr. Holliday.
Hiya, Susie. Anything in box 13?
Box 13. Starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday. Now for Box 13, starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
Go to the park and get a story idea about romance. Sure, why not? What do I come back with? Gravel in my socks, sand in my shoes, and a June bug in my hat band. Holliday, why didn't you pick a different profession like driving a coal truck?
Mr. Holliday.
What's that, Susie?
I said, there's a message in box 13 for you.
Oh, thank you, Susie. Thanks so much.
Don't mention it. Say, you got a faraway look in your eyes today.
Yes, but only as far as the dry cleaners.
Dry cleaners?
Have you ever had a small boy wipe his ice cream cone off on your trousers?
Oh, girls don't call them trousers. In our set, it's flat.
So it is, Susie, so it is. Well, see you later.
Okay, if you say so. But I still don't like that look in your eyes. You look like you might get into trouble.
You know what I think after spending the day in the park?
What?
Trouble will be a welcome relief. Why did I ever have to decide to be a fiction writer? I could have stayed a newspaper reporter. I could have kept on writing those snappy obituary notices and worn a hat that turned up in front and shoes that did the same thing. Well, better see what's in this envelope. If you want real adventure, be at the corner of 7th and Main at 10 p.m. tonight. A black limousine will pick you up at that time. Do not try to engage the chauffeur in conversation. What's this? No signature. Oh-ho, no signature. Black limousines, chauffeurs who won't talk. Meetings on street corners at 10 o'clock at night. Well, this should be interesting. Oh, there it is, a black limousine. Look at that chauffeur.
This way, Mr. Holliday.
Oh, thanks. What a character this driver is. He looks like he spent his nights on a nice cold slab down at the morgue. Wonder if I can get him to talk.
Driver. I said, driver. Chauffeur. Oh, you. Oh,
pardon me.
Through there, Mr. Holliday.
So you do talk. I was beginning to wonder about that.
This way, Mr. Holliday.
Who's that?
It's only me, Mr. Holliday.
That black suit, it makes you almost invisible, you know.
Yes, I know. Follow me. You're curious about the way you were brought here. Did it frighten you?
Maybe. Maybe not.
This room, please. My office.
Well, this is very cozy.
Well, I'm glad you find it so. To eliminate a lot of questions, I'd like to say this. I know all about you.
All?
You're a successful writer. Apparently you fear nothing, and I would presume that some of your adventures spring from that ad you run every week in the Star Times.
Did you find it interesting?
Adventure wanted. We'll go any place, do anything. Do you catch many people with that ad?
I caught you. Or is that vice versa?
I had you investigated, Holliday. I know where you live, what you do. The newspapers have told me of your experiences.
What are you leading up to?
You'll notice I had you brought here by a devious route. I wanted to be sure no one knew you were here.
Go on.
How much do you know about insurance, Holliday?
A great many people buy it. A great many don't.
And of those who do buy, a great many intend to defraud, to steal from their insurance company.
Now look, this is a racket. I'm not interested.
My name is Abner Blake. I'm the chief investigator for Northern Insurance.
Oh.
Do you remember the disappearance of Dr. Max Alexander?
I read something about it. Why?
He carried a very large policy with us. He's been gone almost 7 years. When his 7 years are up, the law will permit his widow to collect. And Holliday.
Yes?
I don't think Alexander is dead.
This man has the coldest, frostiest eyes of any professional man trailer I've ever seen. And he's loaded with energy. Energy which I'll bet has helped him track down the people who tried to cheat his insurance company. Boy, I'm glad I'm on his side.
If you'll think back, Dr. Alexander performed a very delicate brain surgery on a prominent man. The operation was not successful.
I remember that he was criticized in some circles for taking a chance.
Immediately after the patient died, Alexander walked out of the operating room, the hospital, and so far as we've been able to prove, right out of this world. But I still feel that he's alive, somewhere.
And you believe it's an insurance fraud?
I'm sure it is. And I have a reputation, Holliday. No one has ever attempted to defraud Northern Insurance and has been successful.
You, suspect Mrs. Alexander?
Hardly. She's barely left her house in all these years. She receives no mail except from her daughter.
Her daughter?
She lives in New Mexico.
What about your regular men?
They've looked everywhere. They've come up with absolutely nothing.
Police?
Same thing.
And you're afraid you'll have to pay off?
No. Not if I have a smart man, a resourceful one, a man who can be as relentless as I am. And I think that man is you.
If Shakespeare were alive, he would cast Abner Blake in the role of Macbeth and throw him an extra part as one of the witches. But that's no affair of yours, Mr. Holliday. You've got to find a man who's been gone for almost 7 years. And if you were the hero of this story, you'd go to the files of a newspaper and look into the past.
Well, if it isn't Dan Holliday, what are you doing down the morgue at the Star Times?
What would anybody be doing down in the morgue, Mac?
Well, some of them just lay there. You know me, Dad. I just got to have my little joke once in a while. Now, what was it you're looking for?
Oh, the clips on a citizen named Dr. Max Alexander. What have you got on him?
The works, Dan. The whole works.
Prominent man dies following delicate operation. Doctor criticized for taking chance. Dr. Alexander walks out of operating room and disappears. Grief-stricken wife employs private investigators when police fail to find Dr. Alexander. Dr. Alexander given up for dead. Not a bad-looking citizen, the doctor. He's been shot from more angles in this Philadelphia, Atlantic City. Kindly eyes, intelligent face, strong chin. Yes, doctor, when I see you, I'll know you. And I hope to see you soon.
Yes?
Oh, I'm Dan Holliday, Miss Alexander. I'd like to talk to you about your husband.
My husband is dead.
Well, some people think he isn't.
They found something. They think he's alive. Come in. Now then, Mr. Holliday, who are you? And why are you looking for the doctor?
A commission from the insurance company. I hoped you might give me some information.
It was on all the front pages.
That's exactly as it happened?
Yes. He was never seen again. Oh, Mr. Holliday, if only you could find some trace of him.
I'm going to try.
You don't know how terrible it is. Almost 7 years. But still, I've had the feeling that he'll come back someday. You look for me, too.
Well, of course.
I miss him so.
What about your daughter?
After her father's disappearance, she couldn't stand it here in town. She went to our ranch in New Mexico.
Oh?
Her father's disappearance broke her heart. I pray you find him.
Mrs. Alexander, so do I. Mrs. Alexander is a grief-stricken old lady. One who sincerely wants her husband back. So, where to look first? This is the build-up to the main story, Holliday, and if you're smart, you'll bring in all the characters.
Where to, mister?
I want a drawing room to Albuquerque, New Mexico. Well, Holliday, you've got a railroad ticket and an hour to make the train. Better get back to your apartment. A quick shower, pack your bag, and get on your way.
We've been waiting for you, Mr. Holliday.
Well, gentlemen, is this a pleasant intrusion? And I hope you are gentlemen.
We were positive you wouldn't mind.
Oh, of course not. People break in here regularly.
Good. Sit down.
If you don't mind, I like the air up here.
As you wish. I understand you like to travel, Mr. Holliday.
Travel? A wonderful pastime, travel.
Ever think of South America?
Often. You see, I'm a Carmen Miranda fan.
How would you like to go to South America? For me. All expenses paid. For as long as you want to stay.
What would I have to do?
Just forget a few things.
Like New Mexico?
Particularly New Mexico.
Give me about 2 weeks and I'm your man.
You don't seem to understand. You're leaving tonight.
Well, that's what I mean. But I'm going west.
No. South.
You and I would make a nice compass together. Now, suppose you point north and walk right out of this apartment. Oh, and don't forget your gorilla.
You mean Spencer?
If that's his name, I mean Spencer.
You'll hurt his feelings talking that way.
Well, that makes us even. Just looking at him hurts mine.
Is it South America?
In a way. At least I'm showing you the open door policy. Now get out, you and your gorilla.
Spencer.
I wouldn't recommend that.
So?
I said get out.
Have you ever stopped to consider something, Mr. Holliday?
What?
You may never get to New Mexico.
You are listening to Box 13, starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday. And now, back to Box 13. starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
Well, well. Now you've got all the ingredients for a story. Insurance investigator doesn't believe doctor is dead. Wife doesn't believe doctor is dead. Two men try to stop Ryder from making further investigation. All right, Holliday. Write the rest of the plot. Or maybe you'd better hit the sack. This is very pleasant. I've got a comfortable drawing room, and I'll bet it's got 1,000 springs to ease my worries. Oh, the man with the urge to send me to South America. Well, I've got something for him. Now, fellow, what's the big idea breaking in here?
I'm sorry. I must have come into the wrong drawing room.
You came into the wrong apartment a couple of hours ago. Now, what do you want?
I just want to go to sleep.
In my traveling bag?
I was looking for my razor. I wanted to shave.
You just had a close one. Come on.
Where?
To find out if you got space in this train. If you haven't, we'll make some for you. Under guard in the baggage car. This is fine. I couldn't prove a thing. My friend had space, and to the conductor, it seemed like a perfectly logical thing to mistake car 19 for car 18. I wonder who this man is and who's in back of him.
Next stop, Albuquerque.
Albuquerque. Well, that's the end of the line for me. And I hope I don't mean that too literally. Long distance? I want to speak to Catherine Alexander at the Bar Cross Bar Ranch just outside of Belmont. Yes.
Hello?
Miss Alexander?
Yes?
This is Dan Holliday. Wonder if I might come out to the ranch and see you.
Oh, you're the man who's looking for Father. Mother wired me about you.
Was it complimentary?
Mother said she believed if anyone could find Dad, you could. Come right out. I want to talk to you.
And I want to talk to you.
Cab, mister?
Yeah, ever hear of Valmont?
Sure did.
Know where it is?
Sure do.
Very far?
Sure is.
Can you take me there?
Sure can. You got enough money to pay for the trip?
Sure have.
Let's go, then.
Sure thing. This is New Mexico, Holliday. Breathe deeply and treat your lungs to a shot of straight ozone. 20 miles to Valmont, and all you've seen on the whole trip is 4 buzzards, 3 in the air, and the one driving. And if he's a cab driver, I'm a flying disc.
Car behind.
Yeah, so I hear.
Wants me to pull over.
Don't do it.
Know them fellas?
One of them is Spencer.
Friend of yours?
That depends on what you mean by friend.
I gotta pull up. Those guys are gonna run me in the ditch.
Any fight?
Nope.
Then can you recommend a good dentist?
What for?
Something tells me that when this is over, I'm going to need a new set of teeth.
You feel better, young man?
Yeah, thanks. What happened after those two fellas jumped me? Who are you?
My name is Moran. I'm the caretaker up at the Bar Cross Bar Ranch. I was coming down this way when you were forced off the road.
What happened to the driver?
Last I saw of him, he was just a cloud of dust.
I remember now. I got out of the car. He drove away.
Those two fellows started to beat you up good. When they saw me coming, they ran off, too. You had a mighty close call, young man.
I had 3 of them. After this, my luck runs out.
Somebody after you?
And vice versa. Say, how far is the ranch?
Half a mile up the road. Better take it easy.
Come on, I've got to get to the ranch.
Feel you can make it?
My friend, I've got to make it. This is not good. Spencer and his gorilla followed me all the way out here trying to stop me at every turn. Maybe I'm getting warm. But if that's true, why hasn't someone else found Dr. Alexander?
Here's the ranch house, Mr. Holliday. You say Miss Catherine was expecting you?
Yes, but hardly in this condition.
You're Dan Holliday? Well, what happened? You're all beaten up.
So this is Catherine Alexander. What a beautiful girl. And what beautiful eyes.
You'd better lie down, Mr. Holliday. You're badly hurt.
Oh, no, thanks, Miss Alexander. I don't feel that bad. I just look that way.
Anything more I could do, Miss Kathy?
Oh, no. No, and thank you so much. If you hadn't come along, Mr. Holliday might have been badly injured. Perhaps fatally.
Thank you, Miss Kathy.
Now then, how about a hot shower? You can get a rub down and change of clothes.
Miss Alexander, you read a man's mind.
Sometimes that's a pleasure. Depending on the man.
You're depending on me?
What do you think?
Well, this is more like it. Hot shower, brisk rub down, little iodine on a few... Ouch, ouch, that stings. And Catherine was kind enough to loan me some riding clothes. That should indicate a sojourn in the saddle out on the desert. With the stars blinking their approval of my companion. Blinking approval? Holliday, you're an incurable romantic.
Isn't this beautiful? That gorgeous sky and the stars.
You love it, don't you?
I always have. Always will.
Have you been here long?
The Barcross Bar belonged to my dad. We used to come out during the summer. Now I live here all the time.
Alone?
Oh, there's always Moran.
Moran? He's a strange old fellow.
People around here say he's a little attached. But he's been wonderful to me.
Oh, say, those men who jumped me down the road. Moran, ever see him before?
How could he? They were strangers.
Oh. Your mother told me you've been searching for your father a long time.
Yes. Mother and I have spent a fortune on private detectives, investigators, following up leads, but nothing ever happened.
Yes, I know. Oh, tell me, Miss Alexander.
Kathy, please.
Kathy, have you any idea where I might begin to look? I thought you might give me a starting point.
Not unless it would be back in the city. He just walked out one day. No one ever saw him again.
Well, I'd better go back there and start from scratch.
You don't have to leave right away.
I'd enjoy staying a while.
Maybe I have been lonesome. Perhaps I've forgotten what companionship can be.
Perhaps.
You'll stay a while?
A while.
Good. Say, the time. We'll be much too late for dinner. Come on, I'll race you.
You're on.
Hurry or I'll beat you. I'm at the corral gate already.
Kathy, look out! Kathy.
Mr. Holliday, what happened?
You were racing. The horse stumbled over that lower bar and threw her. Look at that gash in her head.
She's unconscious. I hope she isn't seriously hurt.
Don't stand there, man. Get into the house. Call a doctor.
Yes, a doctor. A doctor.
Hurry, will you?
Of course. Get into the medicine cabinet in the house. I need some bandages. She may be suffering from multiple contusions.
Multiple contusions?
Or even a compound skull fracture. Hurry, will you?
Compound skull fracture?
I don't know if you can find it. Hurry, I said. There isn't much time.
Okay. Dr. Alexander.
You are listening to Box 13, starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
Back in the city again. walking up the street towards that same grim gray house where I first met Abner Blake. Up the steps, Holiday, and write the final chapter.
That was a nice job, Holiday.
I was nice about it.
What do you mean?
You didn't see the look in Dr. Alexander's eyes when he recovered his mind. And that lovely, lovely girl being mixed up in a deal like this.
If you feel sorry for her, you're making a big mistake.
Yes, I know. She was following him the day he walked out into the country. She'd almost caught up with him when a hit-and-run driver knocked him down.
That's when she got the idea for the disappearance act.
Why not? The doctor's face had been so damaged no one would ever recognize him. And he'd lost his memory to top it off.
We've got the daughter and the mother in custody.
Just think, if she hadn't have fallen off that horse, I might never have been able to prove that Dr. Alexander was alive.
I know.
Hiding him on his own ranch was the daughter's idea, too.
Why not? No one would pay attention to an old man puttering around the place.
I've got a story, and I don't like it. Mother and daughter hide amnesia victim to collect insurance.
Well, excuse me. Blake speaking. Yes, he's here. For you, Holiday.
Oh, thanks. Hello.
Mr. Holiday, this is Susie.
Oh, yes, Susie.
There's a message for you in box 13. Shall I read it to you?
Now, Susie, you know you're not supposed to open my mail.
But this is already open. It's a postcard.
Oh. Is it interesting?
I think it is.
All right, come on, come on. Tell me what it says.
It says, rental for box 13, $15.
Oh, fine. Goodbye, Susie.
Next week, same time, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holiday in Box 13. Alan Ladd appears through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures and may currently be seen in Wild Harvest. Box 13 is written and directed by Ted Hediger. Original music was composed and conducted by Rudy Schrager. This is a Mayfair production.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
Ted Watterson was a detective with an excellent reputation. Tonight, Ted was discouraged and was telling his friend Bill Leonard about it. The chief called me in this afternoon and told me if I didn't show some results in this case, he'd have to assign it to someone else. Now, that's the case of the disappearing professors, isn't it? Yeah. How far the country's leading scientists could disappear without leaving a clue is beyond me. Say, how about bringing me up to date, Ted? Well, about 15 years ago, four men made up the board of directors of a scientific society. They had to expel one of the members for illegal experimentation. This man swore he'd get his revenge and then promptly slipped into oblivion. Shucks, that's easy, Ted. The man got his revenge. He murdered the board of directors, picked them off one by one. All you have to do is find the expelled professor and your case is solved. Oh, you think so, huh? What if I told you I have found him? Yeah? Where? Riverview Cemetery. He died 10 years ago. Well, that's that. What was his name? Marcel Dudevant. Forget about your case for a few days. Why not spend Saturday and Sunday at my country place with me? See, that's an idea. Okay. Hey, get your things packed. We'll drive up this afternoon. Bill Summer Place was far from the cry of the city. Its houses, its people, and its ways had changed little in the past 50 years. And when the two men finally arrived on its main street late that night, they found the town deserted. Their car slowly wound its way up to the street where Bill's house stood. And they were about to swing into the driveway when Bill noticed a figure trudging along on the other side of the road. He turned his spotlight on the man, a neatly dressed, bearded fellow who called out to them, "That you, Bill?" "Yeah, I thought that was you, Doc. What are you doing out this time of the night?"
"Been to see a patient down the street."
"Hey, you're just in time to have a little nightcap with me and my friend Ted. Come on in, I'll put the car away." A few minutes later, all three men were comfortably seated in Bill's living room, and Bill was pouring as he said,
"Ted's a detective, Doc, one of the best in the city."
"Really? Looking for someone up here, Mr. Watterson?"
"Nope, Ted just came up for a rest."
"Fine place here. I've been resting for 10 years.
Doc Barnsdale here is the best pill peddler for 50 miles around. Tell Ted how you came to settle here, Doc."
"Well, I had to leave the city. My health, you know. Came up here for a rest. Liked it so well, I can't leave." Ted spoke for the first time.
"Not interested in the city practice anymore, Doctor?"
"Nope. I like to do research. In fact, I have my own laboratory right in my backyard. Drop around sometime. I'll show you." A short time later, the doctor left. And as the two boys were preparing for bed, Bill said,
"You know, when Doc first came here, there was a lot of gossip about him. People said he was a well-known surgeon and had to leave the city because of some scandal. Well, that's all over now, and Doc's one of our most respected citizens."
Seems like a nice sort of person. I think I'll accept his invitation, look over his laboratory tomorrow." Next afternoon, Ted did just that, and was surprised at the medical man's equipment. One thing especially interested him, an electric generator large enough to light an entire village. What did Barnsdale, the doctor, need with so much electricity? It made him curious. Another thing that struck him, there were at least 6 dogs in his yard, and all seemed to be afraid of the doctor. Ted decided to satisfy that curiosity bump and look over the doc's equipment again, but this time without the doctor. He told Bill, and Bill said,
"But why? What do you think he's done?"
"Well, I don't know, but I've got an enormous bump, curiosity. And I'd like to learn what he does with all that power he generates."
If you're caught, you'll get into trouble."
"I know all about that. Want to come along?"
"Nope, but I will."
Late that night, the two men crept quietly over to Dr. Barnsdale's laboratory. Ted went inside while Bill kept watch on the outside. What Ted was most interested in was the basement, but a careful search revealed no way of getting down there. As he was about to give up, he looked into a closet. There was nothing but an old sweater hanging on a hook. As he reached to inspect it, he slipped, and to save himself from falling, he grabbed the sweater. The result was spectacular. One of the closet walls rose slowly and silently, revealing a stairway to the cellar. It was dark, but Ted managed to make his way down a step at a time. At the bottom of the stairs, he stopped and listened. The soft hum of a generator and motors reached his ears. Then another sound. A dog barking. Then came still another sound.
"I don't know it. Well, maybe we can.
Men whispering. Cautiously, he turned on his flashlight and swung the arc around the room. It rested on a sight that made Ted's body go limp. There before him, securely fastened to a glass pedestal, was the head of a large dog, barking. Ted approached the animal to examine it more closely. And then he saw that it had no body, just a head, fastened on a glass case full of pumps and heaters and liquids. Astonished and horrified, Ted stared at the unfortunate result of man's experimentation. Then he heard a human voice, a voice that seemed to be calling at the top of its lungs but was making almost no sound.
"Help! Help!"
Quickly, Ted swung his light around. His amazement turned from wonder to unspeakable horror. for in another corner of the room were four more of the glass pedestals with their pumps and heaters and liquids, and on each pedestal rested a man's head. And each head was alive. Alert eyes blinked in the light from the flashlight. Lips moved as though speaking, pleading, begging. Ted moved over closer and placed his ear to the lips of the first head. It spoke.
Turn on the lights. Switch behind me.
Ted did so. The room was enormous. It contained a dozen or so of the glass pedestals. All but five of them were empty. But these five were topped by living heads. Four human, one canine. There was something horribly unnatural about the sight of these living, bodiless heads. It made Ted's flesh crawl. But he forced himself to speak to one of the heads. Who did this to you?
He did. Dr. Dudevant.
Dr. Dudevant? That's impossible. He's been dead for 10 years.
Not dead. Here.
Ted's case had been solved. He'd found the missing Dr. Dudevant, and apparently these were the four missing scientists. But now that he'd found them, what could he do with them? If the doctor were arrested, how could these heads be kept alive? While he was thinking, a door opened silently, and the man known as Dr. Barnsdell entered.
Good evening, Mr. Watterson.
Good evening, Dr. Dudevant.
So, you've discovered my identity.
I have, and I'm placing you under arrest.
Placing me under arrest? Do you think you'll ever leave this place again?
I certainly will, and you're coming with me.
I have other plans, Mr. Watterson. I'm going to place your head on a glass pedestal as I have the others. You'll be in good company. Look at them, Mr. Watterson. Four of our most brilliant scientists.
You'll hang for this, Dudevant.
I don't think so. Without me, these heads would die, and the greatest discovery in medical history would be lost. And besides, Mr. Watterson, I've always wanted to add a detective to my collection.
Well, here's one detective you won't add.
I'm going to leave you here. There are four trapdoors in this room. If you step on any one of them, you'll be dropped into a cell below. Once that is accomplished, you can be easily handled. Good night, Mr. Watterson.
The doctor turned to leave, but before he could reach the door, Bill's voice was heard from the closet door.
Hold it, Doc. I got a gun. Don't move.
With a snarl, the doctor whirled, and as he did so, Ted grabbed him. Struggle was short and decisive. Dr. Dudevant was captured. At least 50 scientists, all famous, came to pay their respects to the four heads. All four begged to die rather than continue their horrible existence. The motors that pumped the life-giving fluids into the heads were turned off. The eyes closed, and eternal rest overtook them. Dr. Dudevant was tried, convicted, but cheated the law by committing suicide. So ended the case of the disappearing professors. And now, I'll return in just a few seconds. Meanwhile, listen to what your announcer has to say. I hope I haven't frightened you with my eerie story. If you'd like to hear more, be at your radio when we meet again for another Spine Tingler. In the meantime, this is Sidney Mason assuring you that there are no spirits, no black magic, no supernatural, no criminals roam the roads. There's nothing to be afraid of, really, but just the same, lock your windows and doors, pull down your shades, cover up. You never can tell what might happen. So long.
The Black Hood.
Criminals, beware. The Black Hood is everywhere.
I, the Black Hood, do solemnly swear that neither threats, nor bribes, nor bullets, nor death itself shall keep me from fulfilling my vow to erase crime from the face of the earth.
Really, Patrolman Kip Verland, a fact known only to newspaperwoman Barbara Sutton, has just been talking to Barbara on the phone. They were discussing the old miracle man and his strange housekeeper, Wamba. Sergeant McGinty, Patrolman Verland's superior, had thought their visit to the voodoo doctor merely routine. But Kip Verland and Barbara Sutton were fascinated by the black magic of the old miracle man. In fact, the old man had given Barbara an odd emerald ring in a twined serpent setting. Wamba, the old housekeeper, objected to the gift. We find a telephone conversation between Kip Verland and Barbara Sutton has been interrupted by a stranger at Barbara's door. Verland is holding the line.
What are you doing here with a gun? You can't come in.
I can't. Yeah. Well, I'm in, and no one's going to stop me either. Not till I get what I came here for.
You can't get away with it.
Bass,
wait,
are you all right?
Yeah,
there's no one around. I made sure the doorman was all right when I came in, and I walked up the stairs.
Well, I've heard enough of that. I'd better get over to Barbara's in a hurry. It's time for the Black Hood to go to work.
I've told you time and time again. That's all the money I have in the apartment. You've got all the silver and linen. What more do you want?
Now I'll have that emerald ring on your finger.
This ring? Why, that's not worth very much.
That's all right. I'll take it anyhow.
It's on my finger, and that's where it's going to stay.
Want to have to shoot it off.
Well, aren't you satisfied? You've got everything of value in the place. I'm going to keep this ring.
Now, look here, I've tried to be nice with you. It looks as if I'll have to take it by force.
Stop!
That'll be all in there. Open that door.
Someone here to help me, eh? Well, I'll get that ring yet if I have to kill both of you.
There he goes, Kip. Out the window and down the fire escape.
He didn't hit you with one of those stray bullets, Bass, did he?
Finger. He almost twisted it off trying to get this ring.
You poor kid. Well, he certainly made a fast exit.
I'll say he did.
Look here, he left his loot behind. Did you get a good look at him?
Yes, and I'm glad I asked you to hold the line. I guess I'd better hang up the phone now. He had a mask over his face, and he wore a dark blue suit. Oh, yes, and he had a cap on, too.
That is right. Here's his cap.
What an experience. I'm glad he left all that nice silver and linen behind, anyway.
Babs, I have a hunch he never really wanted that stuff to begin with.
Well, what makes you think that?
Because here's the roll of bills, too. Your money, isn't it?
Why, yes.
Now, any good self-respecting robber puts money in his pocket, no matter how quick a getaway he has to make. He certainly takes something with him. Now, this visitor of yours was after something else, Babs. Here, let me look at that ring.
Well, here it is. I guess that's what I get for accepting presents from strangers. If the old miracle man hadn't given me this, it all might not have happened.
Yes. Got something there, Barbara. This man was after the ring. Do you mind if I take it with me? I'll return it later.
You're certainly welcome to it. If it means I'm going to have thugs breaking into my apartment, I can just as well return it to the miracle man.
Oh, no. That's one thing we're not going to do.
Why not?
Someone seems to be too anxious to get it back.
Well, you expert, Miss Sutton. There's no one dragged you into the newspaper business, did they?
You sound just like my father. Hmm. Now, I'm not complaining, really, Sergeant, but it is rather disconcerting to have a gunman break into your apartment and practically scare the wits out of you.
Oh, yes? You don't scare so easy. So he didn't take anything, did he?
Well, luckily luckily, Kip came just in time. You see, I'd been talking to him on the phone when the door buzzer rang.
Ah, Kip's a good boy. I guess you know that.
I hope she knows I'm a good boy. Good afternoon, Sergeant.
Hello, Kip.
Hi, Babs.
Say, it's too bad you didn't get that sneak thief this afternoon.
I wouldn't call him that, Sergeant.
Why not? Now, listen. I've had 25 years of dealing with men just like that. What I'd have done was to let him get away with something. Then the rest is easy. You just check up on all the fences in town, train your man that way, and before you know it, your crook is in jail.
Well, Sergeant, I have an idea that this man was after something else when he broke into Barbara's apartment. And I'll tell you why. Now, listen.
Tonight, we work magic again?
Yes. Tonight at midnight, we have a voodoo to perform. This time, it is to be a young man.
Last night, old man die from voodoo. Will be buried tomorrow.
He deserved to die. He was cruel. He beat his wife and children. She came to me in tears to beg for help.
Wamba no, Wamba see.
Tonight we work our black magic on a younger man. He is a thief, the greatest of thieves. He has stolen from his father.
Voodoo will be hard. Young man healthy, and Wamba's magic ring gone.
But the voodoo will work. It always does. And forget about the yellow emerald ring.
Dagnabbit, Kip, maybe there is something to what you say. I'll tell you what. Tonight at midnight, I'll go down there myself to this miracle man's place.
Do you want me to come with you?
No, not tonight. They know you, but they've never met me. And you know the old saying, a new broom sweeps clean.
Well, what are you going to do, Sergeant? Arrest him?
No, I haven't got any evidence to arrest him on. For that matter, what charge have we got against him? But if, as Kip here says, that old emerald ring came from the Miracle Man's shop, and this gunman seemed to be specially interested in it, then maybe... Maybe...
You mean, maybe the old woman, Wamba, knows something about it?
No, that's possible, Miss Sutton. All right. I'm going down there tonight at about 11:30. And in plain clothes, too.
I feel important being taken to my office in a police car.
Quite a thrill, huh?
If you want to pick me up later, Kip, I have only about an hour's work to do. Little story about the triplets born on their mother's birthday up at the Northville Hospital this morning.
Uh-huh, so they got you on that vital statistics stuff now.
Well, if you remember yesterday at the police station, you were asking about the list of people born, married, and dead. Well, that gave me the idea. I suggested it to Mr. Worthington, and there you are, another byline feature.
Babs, you may have a really startling story to write soon on almost the same subject.
Well, I don't follow you, Kip.
It all depends on tomorrow morning's vital statistics list.
Kip, I wish you'd stop talking in riddles. Let me in on it. I'm dying of curiosity.
So am I. Here, let's pull in here for a minute under these trees.
Okay.
I've got something to tell you. Right about here would be all right, I think. Nice and romantic, huh?
Don't tell me that the great Berland is suddenly going romantic.
No, Babs, it's strictly business. Now, last night, at a little past midnight, the Miracle Man and Wamba claimed that their magic or voodoo killed a man.
Oh, Kip, are we going through all that again?
Well, it's been bothering me. And now that this ring stuff has popped up and this little souvenir is around...
Why, that's the cap the gunman left in my apartment, isn't it? I'd forgotten all about it.
I didn't. McGinty and I checked it over, and there's no way of finding out who it belongs to. We'll get to the cap in just a minute. Now, last night, the old man and Wamba claimed they bumped off a man.
Mm-hmm. We've been all through that, Kip.
Yet, there's been no report of a violent death. And according to the vital statistics list, the only death of any kind that occurred around midnight was marked acute indigestion.
Well, so what?
Well, I've got the name of the man who died. He's due to be buried tomorrow afternoon. And right after dinner this evening, I'm going around to see his widow. And, young lady, maybe you'd like to join me.
No, thanks, Kip. I've got a story to write. Be glad to meet you afterward, though. Kip, what are you sniffing at that cap for?
Just wondering about something. Take a sniff of this, Barbara.
Oh, this all seems sort of silly, going around sniffing at old caps.
Go ahead, Babs. Go ahead, sniff it. Do you smell something familiar?
Yes. It isn't exactly perfume, but I know I've smelt that scent before.
Think hard, Barbara. Could it be an incense of some kind?
Why, Kip, you don't mean that you...
Yes, I do. That's the very same heavy incense we noticed at the Miracle Man.
Well, then, Kip... Oh, no, that's impossible. Why, the Miracle Man has a beard down to here. And he's old. He must be at least 90. The thug who broke into my apartment and wore that cap was young. Why, he couldn't have been more than about 35.
Yes, you're right. But there is such a thing as a disguise, you know.
Well, then, Kip, if it was the old man in disguise, then why would he want to take such methods to get back a ring which he just willingly presented to me as a gift?
I thought of that. But there's something else in that place, and someone else who might want this ring.
You mean Wamba?
She might want it for some reason or other.
Kip, you're twisting that ring around in your hand as if you wanted to make a wish over it.
That's an idea. Hey, suppose you put it on, rub it, and make a wish. Here.
All right, this doesn't make sense. Well, what'll I say?
Oh, just put it on and rub it and say, abracadabra.
Abracadabra.
You rubbing it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, alakazam.
Alakazam.
Make your wish now. Boop, skitter, rat trap.
Well, I'm still wishing and rubbing, too. Boop, skitter, rat trap.
Scaram.
Scaram. Kip, look. Look, the ring's opened.
It what?
Rubbing it somehow caused it to open. Look.
Be careful, Babs. Don't touch it. Just hold your hand steady. There might be a poison spring in that ring.
Well, the stone just slid to one side on a sort of hinge. Look.
Well, can you beat that? There's some kind of powder in here. Here, let me take that ring. Now, wait. Close it first.
All right.
That's it. Careful. I don't want to lose that powder.
Well, what are you going to do with it, Kevin?
First, I'm going to have that powder analyzed. Next, I'm on my way to visit a recent widow. And last...
Yes?
Tonight, a certain Miss Barbara Sutton will accompany the Black Hood on a secret mission at midnight.
Come on, old woman. I didn't come down here at midnight to play ping pong. What's going on downstairs?
Private place of Miracle Man. No one go in.
Says you. I get in everywhere and without showing a ticket to.
Miracle Man no like people, no have appointment.
Is that so? Well, get out of the way, old woman. I'm going down there right now.
You like the African pottery?
No, I ain't interested in old pots or pans neither. Just put it away. Out of my way, you old mummy.
Oh, too bad, no like pottery.
Wamba insisted that Sergeant McGitty pay some attention to her African pottery. Crashing the heavy vase on McGitty's head, down goes the good sergeant. Wamba has made good her claim that no one goes into the private chambers of the Miracle Man without an appointment. Now, what will she do with the unconscious McGitty? And what about the Black Hood? Has he been able to discover anything more about the emerald ring and the strange powder? If Wamba intends to harm McGitty, can the Black Hood and Barbara arrive in time to save him? Be sure to listen tomorrow for more thrilling adventures of the Black Hood. The Black Hood is a copyright feature of the MLJ Comic Magazine Group and is broadcast over most of these stations Monday through Friday at 5:15 p.m. This is Mutual.
In NBC's great parade of new shows.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
NBC brings you Dragnet. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to narcotics detail. For more than 2 months, doctors' offices have been burglarized, hospital pharmacies pillaged, drugstores robbed,
medical supply firms ransacked with one purpose in mind: the theft of narcotics. The criminals are expert, cunning, vicious. Your job, get them.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime, investigated and solved by the men who unrelentingly stand watch the security of your home, your family, and your life. For the next 30 minutes, transcribed in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Thursday, March 23rd. It was windy in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of narcotics. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Ed Backstrand, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. I was on my way back from the record bureau, and it was 10:35 p.m. when I got to room 24. Narcotics detail.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll be right over. Thank you.
Get anything, Joe?
Nothing we don't know already. How about you?
That was a county hospital on the phone. Doc Welch. Pretty fair lead. I told him we'd be right over.
What's he got?
One of our informants. Benny Trounsell. Ready?
Let's go. What's with Benny?
Bad shape. Somebody worked him over. They found him in an alley off of South Main.
Yeah?
Doc says Trounsell talked before he passed out.
Anything good?
He claimed he knows who's running the new dope racket in town. Says they got him.
Now, let's take the stairs here, huh? Why should they bother with small fry like Benny?
That's what I'm wondering. Blackmail, maybe.
Benny's still on the needle? Maybe that accounts for his story.
Doc says his skull is fractured. Morphine doesn't do that to you.
Yeah. Benny mention any names?
I don't know. Doc didn't say.
Here's the garage. Come on. When did they pick up Benny?
About an hour ago. He had a pocket full of Bentles on him. Heroin.
Trounsell's small fry. He never had that much dope on him in his life.
That's what makes it interesting. Let's go.
County Hospital.
Yes, sir.
The line is busy. Will you wait? Thank you. Can I help you, gentlemen?
We'd like to see Dr. Welch. She's expecting us.
Your names, please?
This is Sergeant Romero. My name's Friday, police officer.
Oh, yes. Around the corner to your left, room 127. The doctor's waiting for you.
Thank you. Come on, Ben.
I hope Benny's still talking. We could sure use a lead.
Yeah. Here it is. 127.
Hiya, Ben. Joe?
How are you, Doc? Anything new?
Just left Trounsell upstairs.
You think we can talk to him now?
Won't do much good. He died about 6 minutes ago.
For almost 2 years, Benny Trounsell, an addict himself, had been one of the most valuable informants Ben and I had in the narcotic gangs. More than once, he had helped us solve a case, but this time, if Benny Trounsell had any direct leads to the nerve center of the newest narcotic ring, he took them with him. Besides his dying accusation that the ring had gotten to him, he left behind only two small scraps of information. First, when he arrived at the county hospital, Dr. Welch reported that Trounsell repeatedly muttered the name Patterson. Secondly, among the few personal effects found in his pockets was a good amount of heroin and a small piece of white paper with two words scrawled on it, Tucker Building. Benny Trounsell's body was taken to the county morgue, and the next morning it was posted. At the coroner's inquest, the cause of death was listed as a brain hemorrhage induced by severe blows by a blunt instrument on the sides and base of the skull, inflicted by a person or persons unknown. Besides Ben and myself, the only identification witness at the inquest was a woman who managed a rooming house in Benedict Alley, where Trounsell used to stay periodically. After the inquest, we questioned her briefly in our office.
Miss Stritch, you say you can't remember any friends Trounsell had while he stayed at your rooming house?
No, I can't. Besides, if I knew that man used dope, I never would have rented him a room.
How long did he rent from you, Miss Wright?
About 6 months. I run a respectable house. I don't mind if my people drink a little now and then, but those dope users, no, sir.
Did you know anything about Trounsell, Miss Wright? Where he spent his time, where he had his meals?
Well, don't serve at my place. Too much trouble. Most of the people eat at the Ace lunchroom, down the corner.
Where's that, Miss Wright?
Grant and South Main, right on the corner.
And you think Trounsell might have spent some time there?
He might have, I don't know.
Ms. Strike, did Trounsell ever mention anyone by the name of Patterson?
No. Patterson? No.
And you can't recall any friends he might have had?
He had any friends and never set foot in my house, that's all I know.
All right, Ms. Strike, thank you.
Here's a card, ma'am. If you come across any information about Trounsell, we'd appreciate it if you'd call us.
All right. That all?
That's all, ma'am. Thank you.
Well, bye.
Goodbye, ma'am.
Big help.
Yeah, not even a good identification witness.
You got those listings we made on the Tucker building?
Yeah, let's see. Here it is.
Okay, let me have it, huh? Tucker building, 7310 South Wilshire. I wonder what Benny Trounsell could have been doing out there.
Shouldn't be too hard to check. It's a small building.
Yeah. Six listings for the whole place. A couple of law offices, real estate guy, dentists, architect, and a doctor.
One dentist, one doctor. Could be lean.
Maybe. Pretty thin.
Friday. Romero. You got a minute?
Yes, Skipper. Come on.
Yeah. What do you got, Ed?
Letters. Here's a sample. Now listen to this. Chief of Detectives, Ed Backstrand, City Hall, Los Angeles. In view of mounting wave of narcotic robberies, strongly recommend that your efforts to curb this lawlessness be redoubled.
They all like that?
All of them. They're mad. Can you blame them?
Not a bit.
We haven't got much to go on, Chief. The gang's pretty smart.
All right, then let's be smarter. There's no law against it.
Doing our best, Giver.
Then make it better. I'm sick of that bunch, and I'm tired of these letters. And look at that record. And 215 drugstore robs, 8 medical offices, 2 supply houses, 2 hospital pharmacies. Narcotics missing every time. Now, who's behind it?
None of the old-timers. We've checked them out. Gone over every hype and mainliner we know of.
All right, then get on the transients. New faces. Climb on every one of them that shoots the stuff. Until you get to that gang, break it. If you need help, holler. But get to that gang and break it. Do you understand?
Okay, Skipper, we'll try.
You dig up anything on that Trounsell case yet?
Still checking out one lead.
What?
Slip of paper we found in Trounsell's pocket, Ed. Said Tucker building on it, that's all. Just going to check it out when you called.
All right, hop on it, fast. We've got a lot of pressure on us. Keep in touch with the office.
It was almost noon when Ben and I got out to the Tucker building. It was a two-story affair, comparatively small, very modern. We checked with the dentist in the building first, but he'd never heard of anyone by the name of Benny Trounsell. His records and appointment books proved it out.
Well, that's one down, Joe.
Yeah. Let's try that doctor's office now. What's his name?
Let me see. Springer. Dr. Fred Springer. He's on the second floor.
Okay. There's a stairway down there. Come on.
Pretty close to lunchtime. Might not be in.
Maybe. Somebody should be there. We haven't got much time to play with.
Yeah. Chief sure was up in there this morning.
Here's the office. Fred Springer, M.D. We'd like to see Dr. Springer, please.
Do you have an appointment?
No, we don't.
Well, the doctor's not in at present. Would you like to make an appointment for later in the day?
No, ma'am. We're police officers. This is Sergeant Friday. I'm Sergeant Romero.
How do you do? I'm Miss Turner. I'm the doctor's nurse.
Then you must take care of the appointment and record books for the doctor.
Yes, I do.
Well, maybe you can give us the information we're looking for, Miss Turner. Did the doctor ever have a patient by the name of Trounsell? Benny Trounsell?
Trounsell?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think so. Just a moment, I'll check.
Thank you.
No. T-R-O-U-N-S-E-L, is that the way you spell it?
Yes, ma'am.
No, the name's not listed here. Let me check the account book. No. Wait. It's funny.
What's that, Miss Turner?
Here in the back of the book in the doctor's handwriting. Look.
Trounsell, the Black Parrot.
Certainly funny. I can't remember seeing that notation before. It must be fairly recent.
Miss Turner, what kind of a clientele would you say Dr. Springer has?
Oh, it's quite exclusive. Beverly Hills, Bel Air. That's where most of the bills are mailed.
Can you recall seeing Trounsell in the office here, Miss Turner? Small man, thin, walked with a kind of a limp, not very well dressed?
No, I don't think so. It doesn't sound like any of our patients.
Would you show us the doctor's prescription lists for the last 2 months? We'd like to check them.
Well, I'm afraid I can't. Dr. Springer keeps him in the safe. He's the only one who has the combination.
How long you been with Dr. Springer?
About 10 months. Ever since he started his practice out here.
Where was he before that?
Philadelphia.
I don't understand all these questions. Is anything the matter?
Just a routine check, Miss Turner. When do you expect the doctor back?
About 4 this afternoon. He's out making home calls.
All right. Here's our card. Would you ask him to call us as soon as he comes in?
I'll do that.
Thank you, Miss Turner. Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye. Oh, say, Miss Turner, there's one more question.
Yes?
Does Dr. Springer have a patient by the name of Patterson?
Oh, yes. One of the doctor's first patients, John Patterson. He lives out on East Beverly Drive.
When we left Dr. Springer's office, we called R&I. There was no make on John Patterson. Ben and I drove over to see him just on a hunch. It didn't pay off right then, but it showed a little promise. When the maid came to the door of the Swank apartment, she told us Patterson was out for the day. We asked her about Patterson's occupation. She didn't know. We asked her about his friends, his business acquaintances. She could remember only 2 people visiting the apartment. One of them was Dr. Springer, apparently a constant visitor. The other, a tall, dark man who spoke bad English. We asked the maid how long she had worked for Patterson. She said ever since he moved to Los Angeles, about 6 months before. A few things started to fall into place, but it was strictly a guesswork operation. Ben and I got in the car and headed for the south end of the city to check out some of the places Benny Trounsell was supposed to have frequented. We met a stone wall. From the Ace Lunch Room near Benny's former rooming house to the Black Parrot, no one was willing to talk. Threats didn't work and neither did promises. Ben and I gave up for the moment and headed back to the office.
Pacific Ambulance 1, call to Alhambra, is now code 3.
Seems like Skid Row doesn't want any part of this one.
Yeah, there's a bad feeling. Something's got him scared.
Sure would like to know what it is, or who it is.
Yeah, I'd like
to know.
Control
1, unit
80K.
Control 1, unit 80K.
Us, Joe. Get it, will
you? I got it. 80K to Control 1. 80K to Control 1. Go ahead.
80K. Call station 2511. Code 3.
80K to Control 1. Roger. KMA 367.
I wonder what that's all about.
Well, let's find out. There's a drugstore. They ought to have a phone. Pull over, huh? You got a nickel?
Yeah, sure.
Thanks. I'll be back in a minute.
Thank you.
Chief of Detectives Office, Hannon.
This is Friday, Mike. The chief there?
Oh, yeah. Just a minute. Backstrand talking.
This is Friday, Ed. What do you got?
You tied up?
Nothing big.
Then check in as soon as you can. Got something good.
What?
You remember the stick-up at St. Agnes Hospital about a month ago? Pharmacy there?
What about it?
2 patrolmen picked up a user down near Union Station about an hour and a half ago.
Yeah?
Guy was way back in his heels. He had 2 vials of morphine on him. Vials had serial numbers.
Good. Did they match out?
Perfectly.
Thanks, Ed. We'll be right in. When Ben and I got back to the office at 3:52 p.m., we picked up Chief Ed Backstrand and went directly to the crime lab where Lieutenant Lee Jones analyzed the contents of the 2 vials taken from the suspect. Jones told us it was high-grade morphine. We went back to the office and double-checked the serial numbers on the vials with the crime report on the St. Agnes Hospital robbery. They matched.
And there's a good break. These vials were in the loot when the gang knocked over the hospital 28 days ago. I stay on the trail and we'll crack that gang wide open.
This the arrest report on the guy, Ed?
Yeah. Picked him up in a bar off South Main.
Who is the guy? Trying you?
Yeah, here it is, man. James Steiner, Phoenix, Arizona, age 37, transient laborer. Anybody talk this guy yet, Ed?
Not yet. He shouldn't be too hard. You better get on it.
Right, Skipper. Come on, Joe.
Check you later, Ed. What time you got, Ben?
Let me see. 4:25.
Phone call for you, Ben.
Yeah, who was it?
Your wife. Wants you to pick up some aspirin and a bottle of nose drops for your kid on your way home.
Oh, yeah. Almost forgot.
That the only call we had, Mike?
That's right.
Thanks.
Well,
you got that Dr. Springer's number, Ben?
Yeah. Here it is. Crestview 55284.
Thanks.
Nurse said he'd call us around 4, didn't he?
Yeah.
Dr. Springer's office.
This is Sergeant Friday down at the police department. Dr. Springer there?
Well, no, he isn't, Sergeant. He called in about 20 minutes ago and I gave him your message. He said he'd call you.
All right, Miss Turner. When he comes in, tell him to call us. Impress on him it's urgent.
All right, Sergeant, I'll do that. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
No luck?
I don't know. Just a hunch. He may be ducking us.
Who are you calling now?
State Medical Board. Maybe they can check us out on Dr. Springer. I put the call through to the State Medical Board and asked for a check on Dr. Fred Springer. They said they'd call back within the hour. In the meantime, we had James Steiner brought to one of the interrogation rooms for questioning. It was all talk.
Now, look, it's like I told the sergeant when they booked me. I don't know anything about this hospital job.
Sit down, Steiner.
Oh, all right, thanks.
How long you been in the city, Steiner?
L.A.? Oh, about a month. I came from Phoenix, looking for work. Things are pretty slow in Phoenix.
Where'd you get the morphine?
Huh?
I said, where'd you get the morphine?
The stuff? I bought it. Just for a pop now and then. I just play around with it. Just for kicks.
Who'd you buy the vials from?
Who? I don't know. Got a bar. Gave me a price.
Which bar was that?
Which bar? The Black Parrot. I'm not hooked. I just play around with it, just for kicks.
What'd the guy look like, Stoner?
What did he look like? I don't know. Tall, I guess.
Would you remember him if you saw him again?
Remember? Sure. I talked to him a couple of nights at the bar.
Was he on the stuff? Was he a hype?
Hype? Yeah, maybe. Tall fella, dark.
You shooting the stuff?
Shooting the stuff? No, I'm no mainliner. I never took in the veins of my life. I told you, I'd do it just for kicks. Just a pop now and then.
Take off your shirt. Let's see your arms.
Huh? My arms?
Come on, take it off. Who are you kidding, Stanley? Your arm looks like a pincushion.
I told you, just once in a while, just for the kicks. I'm hooked on it.
They found 2 vials of stolen morphine on you, Steiner. You can go 2 ways, hard or easy.
Hard or easy? I told you I ain't done nothing. I bought the stuff. I use a cap or a bindle once in a while for kicks, but I'm not hooked. I bought the stuff, I tell you.
Who was he, Steiner? Who sold it to you?
Who? I told you, I met him in a bar, the Black Parrot.
Who was he?
He was tall, dark. He gave me a good price.
Come on, let's have it, Steiner. His name.
I'm feeling sick. You got something for me? I'm sick.
All right. Mike!
Yeah, Joe?
Get some milk. A couple of quarts right away.
Okay.
You ready to tell us, Steiner? Who was he?
I'm sick.
We're getting some milk for you now. Come on, you better talk.
Max. That's all he said. Name was Max. He gave me a good price. I only take a pop now and then just for kicks.
You think you could point him out for us?
Yeah, maybe. I'm sick.
Narcotics, Romero.
Hello, this is Dr. Springer calling. You wanted to talk to me.
Yes, we did, Doctor, and we've got a few questions we'd like to ask you. Oh, hold on just a minute, will you? It's Dr. Springer, Joe.
All right, tell him we got to see him tonight. We'll call him back later.
Dr. Springer?
Yes?
Sorry, Doctor. We'll have to see you later on tonight. You be at home?
Well, I have an appointment this evening. Would you mind telling me what this is all about?
Sure, Doctor. It's about a man named Benny Trounsell.
Oh. I see.
And if you don't mind, we'd like to check over your prescription list with you.
Yes. I'll cancel my appointment. You can contact me here at home. 1538 South Road. I'll be here all night.
All right, Doctor. Thank you. We'll see you later, then.
Yes. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
What'd he say? All right?
Yeah, it's all right. I'll buy that hunch of yours now, Joe.
Hmm?
Dr. Springer, he knows who killed Benny Trounsell. I bet he knows why.
When Mike Hannum came back with the milk, we fed it to Steiner, and then we put him back in his cell. We put in another call to John Patterson out on East Beverly Drive, but there was no answer. We left word with Hannum where we were going, and then Ben and I headed out for Dr. Springer's home. It was 7:35 when we pulled up into the driveway at 1538 South Road, a low, rambling, ranch-type home. We got out of the car and made our way down the path to the front door. A gray Persian cat followed us. The door was half open. We knocked, but there was no answer. Through the window, we could see the living room was dimly lighted. We went in. We found Dr. Springer sitting in a large carved mahogany chair in the dining room. The room was hung with draperies. He was slumped forward, face down, on the dining table. There was a bullet hole in his right temple. On the floor near his right hand was a .32 automatic pistol. In the center of the dining table was a piece of white paper.
Looks like you beat us.
Yeah. Any names on that confession?
One. Says he killed Trounsell. No, wait a minute. It says, John Patterson, he forced me to this.
What?
I don't know. What's it look like to you? Here's another one. Norberg. That's all it says. And then he signed his name, Dr. Fred Springer.
Ben, come over here. Look at these.
Hypodermic needle. It works. Is this morphine?
White powder. Could be.
Then he was on it himself.
Looks like it. We'll find out when they post him. I'll get it. Yeah.
Sergeant Friday there, please.
This is Joe, Mike. What do you got?
Can you talk all right there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Just got a kickback on your call to the state medical board on this Dr. Fred Springer.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a registered physician in the state of California. Besides that, his license was revoked in Pennsylvania 2 years ago. Illegal operations.
That explains it. Notify homicide. Get the crime lab in the corner out here, will you? Looks like Springer shot himself.
Okay, Joe, right away.
We'll wait for him, but hurry him up, Mike. We got a couple more places to check out tonight.
Okay, Joe, see you later.
Right.
What's next? Patterson Place?
I don't know. Maybe we ought to try Steiner first.
Sounds good to me. Feels like we're getting close.
Yeah, Ben. Real close. 12 minutes later, homicide and the crime lab men checked in at the Springer house, and Ben and I checked out. We went back to the office and found Ed Backstrand waiting for us. We told him our story, and he sent two men out to keep an eye on the Patterson Place. Two other men went to work to try and track down the other name in Springer's confession note, Norberg. Ben and I went up to the county jail and picked up Steiner. The three of us started out to look for the man who sold Steiner the two vials of morphine stolen from a hospital pharmacy a month before. The man's name was Max. He was tall and dark. That was all we knew. The rest of it was up to Steiner. Two other men from the detail, Davis and Emerson, came along with us to take care of Steiner if anything went wrong. Our first stop was the Black Parrot Tavern. Davis parked the car in an alley down the street. Steiner, Ben, and I got out and walked the rest of the way.
You understand what you're supposed to do, Steiner?
Me? Yeah. I go in first and sit at the bar. You two will follow me. I sit at the bar, and if I see Max, I give you the sign. That's okay, huh?
That's right. And you don't try to break for it.
Break for it? Me? I told you, I'm squaring with you guys.
All right, Steiner. Go ahead.
Let's hope it works, Joe.
Yeah. There he goes inside. Come on. Now, look, try to grab one of the booths along the wall if you can, huh?
Right. Here we are.
The first booth, Ben, it's empty.
Yeah.
Fellas left to order at the bar. Waitress got a night off.
Make it a couple of beers, will you?
Couple of beers? Okay.
Joe, Go look at Steiner.
Yeah, he's signaling. Must mean the guy putting on his coat over there. No, hold it, Ben. Wait till he gets past us. All right, get Steiner back to the car. I'll tail the guy. You come after me. I didn't know how late Steiner was or how much we could trust him. All I knew was that the man I was following was tall and he was in a hurry. I followed him 3/4 of a block before he turned in at a motel. He went to a cottage at the rear of the lot, let himself in, and closed the door quickly behind him. A minute later, Ben and the others pulled up in the car.
Got him staked out, Joe. Steiner says that was Max.
Let's make sure. Come on.
Which one's the inn?
The one down at the inn here. Now be careful.
You too.
All right, here we are. Wait a minute right there. Look, there's no rear door. He's got to come out the front. Keep the door clear. You ready?
All set.
Cover me. Open up in there.
Who is it?
Police officers. Open up.
Just a minute.
All right, Ben, give it back to him.
Don't shoot! We'll come out!
All right, throw your guns out first, then come out with your hands behind your head and make it fast. Watch it, Ben. He's making a break.
All right, mister. That's far enough. Get out of my way. Get out of
Get
my...
him, Ben. That's good, Ben. You all right?
Yeah.
He didn't mean it, Copper. He didn't mean it. He didn't know what he was doing.
Well, that must be a good excuse, lady. A lot of people use it. Come on, Ben. Let's take him in. It was 10 minutes past midnight when we got back to headquarters. Both the man and the woman were booked for violation of the State Narcotics Act, a felony. He gave his name as Max Jansen. In his luggage, we found 13 vials of morphine, large quantities of heroin, and a small amount of panopin. He gave us the names and addresses of 6 active members of the narcotics gang. He identified Dr. Springer as second in command.
Just a few more questions, Jansen.
Yeah, all right.
Why did Springer kill Trounsell?
He had it coming. Trounsell knew the score, and he was blackmailing them, bleeding them white.
Why didn't the gang take care of him?
Boss said no rough stuff. Things were going too good. He warned Springer, but he wouldn't listen.
All right, Jansen, just one more question. Who's the boss?
Do I get off light? State's witness?
It might help. We can't promise you anything.
Who's the boss, Patterson?
Yeah.
138 East Beverly Drive?
That's right.
What about Norberg? How does he figure?
The same guy. Patterson, Norberg, both the same.
And what's his real name?
Norberg. Tony Norberg.
What's his front?
He's legitter. He used to be importing business.
Where?
Here. Got an office downtown. Do I get protection?
Where's Norberg now?
Home, out in Laurel Canyon. I get protection?
I thought you said he lived out on East Beverly.
His apartment. His home's out in the canyon.
Where? What's the address?
Do I get protection?
You'll get protection.
Wind and Way. 860 Wind and Way.
All right, Friday. Romero, take some men with you.
All right, Davis, cover the back of the house. Levine, you cover the front. Come on, Ben.
Yes?
Mr. Norberg in?
Who's calling?
Police officers.
Oh, come in, won't you?
Thank you.
Now get your hands up. Face the wall.
You'll never make it, lady. The house is surrounded.
Tony, get the stuff. It's our only chance.
They'll cut you down, Norberg.
All right, Jeannie, give them the gun.
Don't be a fool. They're going to march out the door in front of us, right to the car.
I'm not going, Jeannie. Try it if you want. I'm not going.
All right, Tony, stay. Come on, coppers.
You'll never make it, lady.
I said move. Fast.
All right, Ben, hit the dirt.
She's going for the car.
See if you can get those tires. Come on.
Dane?
Yeah.
Norberg was smart. Must be the girlfriend.
Guess so.
Wonder why they start.
Hmm?
Why do they get on the stuff, Joe?
For kicks, Ben. None of them ever get hooked. Just for kicks.
The story you have just heard is true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
Tony Norberg, alias John Patterson, was tried and convicted for possession of narcotics, robbery, and conspiracy, and was sentenced to the maximum term prescribed by law, each count to run consecutively. He died 3 years and 11 days after his arrival at the state penitentiary. You have just heard the 9th in a new series of authentic cases transcribed from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet is furnished by the Los Angeles Police Department.
Tonight's program is dedicated to Chief Erskine Irk Fish of the North Sacramento Police Department, who on the night of August 11, 1935, gave his life so that ours might be more secure.
Dragnet came to you from Los Angeles. This is NBC. National Broadcasting Company.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.